At 8:15 a.m. on August 6, 1945, a widow watched her neighbor dismantle his house. A doctor lounged on his porch in his underwear, reading the morning paper. A young woman turned to chat with a colleague at work. A priest rested on his cot after morning mass. A surgeon walked a hospital corridor. A minister helped a friend move furniture. Then came the flash, whiter than any white they'd ever seen, and everything changed. In that instant, 100,000 people died. These six lived. Their stories, captured by journalist John Hersey just months after the bombing, became the most powerful testament to nuclear warfare ever written. Published in its entirety in a single issue of The New Yorker in 1946, the only time the magazine devoted an entire issue to one story, Hiroshima transformed how the world understood atomic weapons, shifting the narrative from military triumph to human tragedy. The flash came without warning. Mrs. Hatsuyo Nakamura was hurled across her kitchen as her house collapsed, burying her youngest daughter chest-deep in debris. Dr. Masakazu Fujii's Riverside Hospital toppled into the Kyo River, trapping him between timbers with his head barely above water. Father Wilhelm Kleinsorg wandered dazed through the mission garden in his underwear. Dr. Terufumi Sasaki, standing one step beyond an open window at the Red Cross Hospital, survived unscathed while the building collapsed around him. Miss Toshiko Sasaki was crushed beneath bookcases, her leg shattered. Reverend Kiyoshi Tanimoto threw himself down as a pressure wave passed over him. Survival came down to terrible randomness. One step to the left, Dr. Sasaki dies. One second earlier, Mrs. Nakamura's children are killed. From a hillock, Reverend Tanimoto witnessed a massive smoke tower rising miles above the city while strange, marble-sized water drops fell around him. Though he heard no planes, nearby houses burned fiercely. He began running desperately toward the city, toward his wife and baby somewhere in the awful murk. Mrs. Nakamura dug out her three children and, in irrational panic, dressed them in winter clothes despite the summer heat. Every house had collapsed, with fires breaking out everywhere. She headed toward Asano Park, passing countless ruins where muffled screams rose from those trapped inside. At the Red Cross Hospital, Dr. Sasaki became an automaton, mechanically bandaging wounds as casualties poured in by the thousands. The injuries defied explanation. Skin hanging in sheets, faces swollen beyond recognition, eyeballs melted from their sockets. As fires spread across the city, those who could flee did so. Father Kleinsorg, weakened and desperately thirsty in Asano Park, was moved to tears when a Japanese woman offered him tea leaves, a simple gesture of humanity after weeks of anti-foreign sentiment. Mrs. Saki suffered for 2 days, with her crushed leg becoming gangrenous. When friends finally found her, they delivered devastating news. Her mother, father, and baby brother were presumed dead. Mr. Tanimoto was haunted by Mrs. Kamai, who carried her dead baby for 4 days, constantly asking if he'd found her husband. In the novitiate chapel, Jesuits sheltered 50 refugees, including the Nakamuras, whose son woke screaming from nightmares. Dr. Sasaki worked 3 days straight with 1 hour sleep. Survivors theorized about the mysterious weapon. Father Sislik spread a false rumor about magnesium powder ignited by the city's electrical system. Hospital staff found X-ray plates mysteriously exposed in their lead-lined vault. The Japanese government offered only cryptic words. Details are being investigated. On August 9th, a second atomic bomb fell on Nagasaki. A week later, recovering survivors suddenly developed alarming symptoms: purple spots, hair loss, fever, weakness, bleeding gums. Rumors spread that the bomb deposited poison emitting deadly radiation for 7 years, making Hiroshima uninhabitable. Mrs. Nakamura worried her submerged sewing machine, her livelihood, was contaminated. Japanese physicists pinpointed the bomb's center near Gokoku Shrine and discovered permanent shadows, haunting silhouettes burned into stone. Radiation measured only 3.9 times natural background levels, deemed safe for return. But damage festered inside survivors' bodies. Father Kleinsorg, hospitalized in Tokyo with 104-degree fever and dangerously low white blood count, defied doctors' predictions, neither dying quickly nor recovering within 2 weeks. A year later, survivors struggled to rebuild. Mrs. Nakamura lived in a wooden shack, selling clothes as savings vanished. Mr. Tanimoto held services in his damaged home, dreaming of a new church. Dr. Sasaki worked as the sole surgeon at the recovering Red Cross Hospital, perpetually exhausted despite marrying. Miss Sasaki prepared for Catholic conversion while battling depression over her permanent disability. Despite individual hardships, survivors shared a curious, elated community spirit, pride in enduring terrible suffering with dignity. Most Hiroshima residents remained surprisingly indifferent about the bomb's ethics. Many, like Mrs. Nakamura, simply said, "Shikata ganai, it can't be helped." The city began rebuilding. Scientists calculated the bomb's heat reached 6,000 C at center, with pressure ranging from 5.3 to 8.0 tons per square yard. Vegetation returned, first panic grass, then feverfew, eventually trees. New buildings rose from the ashes. The survivors faced more complicated recovery, as radiation's effects would shape their lives for decades. For over a decade, the Hibakusha, explosion-affected persons, received no government assistance despite severe medical conditions and employment discrimination. Hatsuyo Nakamura's life became desperate. Weakened by radiation sickness, she could work only 3 days before needing 2 days' rest. She took in sewing, did laundry, washed dishes, earning barely enough for food. When parasites made her too ill to work, she sold her husband's sewing machine, the lowest moment of her life. Only in 1954, after a fishing boat was irradiated by an American hydrogen bomb test, did public outrage force government action. The 1957 A-bomb victims' medical care law finally provided support. After retiring in 1966, Nakamura collected her health book entitlement and began enjoying embroidery and weekly folk dancing. Miss Sasaki's engagement collapsed when her fiancé's family refused to let their son marry a hibakusha and cripple. During this dark period, Father Kleinsorg's faithful visits provided her only comfort. One morning, seeing sunlight on bamboo leaves, she experienced unexpected joy and found herself reciting the Lord's Prayer. She was baptized, eventually becoming Sister Dominic Sasaki. At 33, she directed a home for 70 elderly people, discovering her greatest gift was helping inmates die peacefully. Her Hiroshima experience gave her unique insight into death's terrible loneliness. She offered quiet presence, simply holding hands to affirm she was there. 40 years after the bombing, most hibakusha were elderly, their average age 62. A 1984 poll showed that 54.3% believed nuclear weapons would be used again. Their power lies not just in the horror witnessed, but in how they continued living, carrying visible and invisible scars while rebuilding from ashes. Mrs. Nakamura's stoic perseverance, Dr. Sasaki's dedication to healing, Father Kleinsorg's spiritual questioning, Miss Sasaki's transformation through faith, Dr. Fuji's tragic decline, Reverend Tanimoto's public advocacy. Together, they represent not just one city's destruction, but a warning about the terrible power humans have created. As Reverend Tanimoto wrote, Hiroshima's message has nothing to do with politics. It's a fundamental question of whether we can control the destructive powers we've unleashed. Behind every statistic are human beings getting ready for work, caring for children, reading newspapers, saying prayers. People whose lives can be shattered in an instant. Their stories demand we remember. This happened once. We must ensure it never happens again.